Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, the Weather Bureau got this one wrong. Thank goodness the sun is out. It's not raining. It's beautiful outside. And that means that there's a little angel watching over her sister, I could tell you that, because whenever the sun shines, I know she's there. And it's going to shine even more because we're going to be talking about Julia Chavon. She's trying to rescue the legendary New York publishing house, West 57th. And she's really got a whole bunch of problems here. Her mother is driving her crazy because she would like to run her life and she doesn't want her to do it. Her ex-fiancé, her ex-best friend, even the ghost, this was so cool, of her dead father, they all want to tell Julie what she needs. But what does Julia need? She's got to decide that for herself. And plus she's dealing with a dead con artist, an oversexed London agent, an irresistible young book editor that's really hot, people, girls, just listen to that, and a drunk author who's completely off the charts. So we're going to talk to one of my favorite mystery thriller writers. Ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Stride is taking a vacation till March, and we're going to talk to Brian Freeman. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to be back with you.
It's great to have you back here. Okay, so, question, why did you decide to try your hand and a romance, murder, mystery, ghost novel?
Yes, this is a little different from what people are used to from me. This is actually not the first time that I wrote more of a mystery romance novel. A few years ago, I wrote a book called The Agency. And a lot of people don't realize it's me because we released it under a pseudonym. It came out under the author's name, Allie O'Brien. And it was sort of a project I worked on with my agent, Allie Gunn, in London. And we had a great run with it. We have got a lot of great reviews and publicity. People loved the book. It was so different, again, from what I usually do. And ever since then, people have been saying, oh, when are you going to come out with another book in that style? And honestly, there was sort of a terrible tragedy in the middle. My lovely agent Allie actually passed away about 2 years ago, very very tragically and unexpectedly. And so I really had to kind of decide, you know, for myself, did I want to kind of pursue another project in that vein without Allie? And I just decided that I had characters and a wonderful story, and I wanted to get it out there for folks. So West 57 is the result of that, and I always tell readers, hey, stick with me. I'm not always going to do what you expect from book to book, but all the folks that have read West 57 have been writing to me and talking about how much they love the book. So yeah, it's not Jonathan Stride, but I think it's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun, and she and her friend Brie are completely nuts, which is great, because my sister and I used to do completely nuts things, too, and have fun. We used to do the Laverne and Shirley walking down the street, like two quick wackos.
Yes, Julie and Brie are the best of frenemies, that's right.
Yeah. I know, it's hard. So why did you decide, you're in publishing, a publishing company, and tell us about Julie. She's a trip and a half.
Yeah, you know, I work in the publishing industry as an author, so I kind of know a lot of the ins and outs of publishing, and it's fun being able to take an industry that you're familiar with and have some fun with it and play up sort of the gossip and the backstabbing and all of the things that you would typically see on an industry and on TV. And just have some fun with it. So that was kind of what drove me to focus on the publishing industry. I mean, there's just a lot of fun and glamour associated with that. And Julie just makes a great lead character for the book. I mean, she's based in New York, so the whole book takes place right in Manhattan. She's got kind of a wry, witty outlook on the world, she doesn't take herself too seriously, and she doesn't take the world too seriously, but she's got a lot of emotion, a lot of passion, a lot of drama about her, and she's just a very I think she's just a very warm character, and I think readers will enjoy following along with her struggles, and then of course so much of the book she spends with with her London agent friend Bree, and Bree is just a trip and a half. I mean, she's the wild one coming over from London, and the two of them just have sparring matches throughout the book. I love that. I had a reader that read Whiz 57, and she sort of leaned over at an event and said to me, "So how did you get the inside dirt on all these female friendships? Because you seem to know too much."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is definitely a good question, because you wonder how you create the dialogue between them and how you know. I guess if people go to bars or singles things, or you just listen on the street and you just can hear it, and you know, just the environment around you. I mean, they were hilarious together. So how did you figure out what they were going to say?
Oh, you know, those characters, they kind of wrote their way onto the page. I just gave them a canvas, and they started painting their own dialogue back and forth.
That's the hardest thing, I think, for a lot of, especially myself, authors to write is dialogue. So it doesn't sound stilted, but it sounds natural. And, you know, every time they got together, I cracked up laughing. And there were days where I'm getting so many depressing murder books and terrorist books and all about, you know, the organizations and terrorist organizations, and some of them are sad books about people very sick. And then I got this and I was cracking up. I said, I have to read something that's funny. But I have
well,
to tell
and that
you.
That was exactly what I was going for as well. I mean, West 57 is designed to make you feel good and make you laugh, and I think we need some of that right now. I mean, we need kind of a escape book, and I think that's exactly what people are going to find in West 57.
Well, I have to tell you, Cherie is her mother, right?
Yeah.
And she reminded me of my mommy, Ruthie. My mother
oh,
was
no.
amazing. My mother was very, very, it had to be her way. I talked to somebody about this yesterday. My husband was saying to me, you know, you're a perfectionist. I go, well, that's Ruthie. And my mother always believed that if you're going to do something, you're going to do it right or don't do it. And she picked my profession 100 years ago. She said, you're going to be an educator, work with children with learning disabilities and reading, and that's what you're going to do. And that's what I did. And I'm not sorry. Tell you the truth, I'm not sorry at all.
Yeah, and
it was the best thing
and
I did.
Yeah, I love the interactions between Julie and Cherie in this book. At one point, Julie tries to sort of get out from under a date that Cherie has arranged for her, and Cherie goes on this epic rant for about a page. And it's one of my favorite pieces of extended dialogue in my books, because Cherie just shreds her poor daughter and makes sure she knows she is going to do exactly what she.
Well, my mom was the same way. If she had someone she wanted me to go out with, it was just the way it was. And what can I say? And a lot of times it was just like, Ma, have pity on the child. I can handle it myself. Don't worry about it. And then,
well,
of course, if it didn't work out, she would have a fit.
And that's what Julie says at one point, that she has to face the truly scary possibility that her mother may actually be right.
She went, oh, my God, the guy that she, oh, hmm. It's a good thing Julie finally came to her senses or something.
There we go, exactly.
You got to stand up, people. So who else played another part? Well, who's Garrett? Oh, he's so cute, though.
Oh, yes, Garrett is this editor in the West 57 publishing house that Julie has inherited from her father. And Julie and Garrett have always had this sort of dance going on between them for several years that has a romantic spark behind it. And both of them, they never want to face it head on. And so they just sort of, you know, they head around the subject and talk past it, and you just know that there's something between them, but neither one, and you just wonder, is one of them finally going to have the courage to finally open up and admit what they're feeling? So that drives a lot of the romance in the book as well.
That does, but then again, when everybody reads the ending, they're going to wonder if there's going to be a sequel. It has to be, seriously. Why does her father... The ghosty humor is hilarious. How come you added her father as he's sort of like her conscience, and he has a little drama and a little humor, but there's a little mystery and murder there.
Yeah, you know, I was pulling the book together, I knew it was sort of a risk, you know, bringing Sonny Siobhan, Julie's father, in as is he mm-hmm. is he a ghost? Is he a figment of her imagination? Is he kind of the embodiment mm-hmm. of what she's really thinking? But you know, he's such a larger than life character himself, and really at the heart of this book is the fact that, you know, with everything mm-hmm. that's going on in Julie's life, you know, the big thing that she's dealing with is the fact that, you know, her father has always been her hero, and he very suddenly passed away, and she's dealing with his loss throughout the book, and has to mm-hmm. kind of come to terms with losing him and what their relationship was like and what he was like. And so I think that the real issue is that as Julie deals with all these other things going on, that she's trying to come to terms with the fact that Sonny's not in her life anymore, and so he sticks around for a little while, and again, mm-hmm. is it a ghost, or is it just sort of her talking to herself and thinking through you know what her relationship with Sonny was like? But there are a lot of real there are a lot of real emotional moments there, and you know, mm-hmm. I love the one moment in the book where Julie has had a bad night, and her father shows up at sort of this very inopportune moment, and she sort of has a fit and tells him it's a ghost to go away. She doesn't want him around anymore, and he disappears, and Julie just starts crying because he's not there anymore. So I think that says a lot about the nature of that relationship.
I wish I could show that to my father. I always wish so. Do you know, Mark, are you around? Dad, are you there? Can you guide me? I think a lot of people would like to have, you know, somebody that they could just look up, you know, you're there, that's good, I'm glad you're still in my life. Although they are still in your life, even though they're not there.
Yeah. Exactly. So, that's exactly.
Now, West 57th is not doing well. It's got debts. It's really not happy. So who wants to take it away from her? Who wants to buy it and why?
Yes. West 57 is a struggling publishing house. It was one of the great American names in publishing in the book, and yet mm-hmm. it's sort of drowning in red ink, mm-hmm. and so Julie is facing this you know big publishing conglomerate that wants to come in and essentially buy up the brand and turn mm-hmm. it into more of a corporate publishing house instead of the independence that it's always been, and Julie has to decide, is there any way to save it? And can she imagine the idea of her father's legacy being left to the hands of sort of these corporate publishers? On the other hand, she's got a big book coming out for West 57, but
King Royal. Oh God!
Yes, the wilder things start to get.
He's crazy. Oh my God, he is so crazy. But you know, it's like I was reading in the news. I heard on the news that Marriott bought Star Wars, and.
Yes.
My nephew works for Star Wars, and I don't know how that's going to affect anything. But you wonder, because she was concerned, they buy West 57th, as any place should be. What happens to the people that work there?
Right, exactly.
That's scary. So tell everybody, King Royal is completely, he's off the charts. How did you create him? I mean, why doesn't you smack him in the head and just tell him, I'll take your book and you just stay out of my life? And that book signing was hilarious. Oh my God.
King Royal was so much fun to create as a character. I mean, he is this wildly over the top author who just Julie can't control. He comes in from London with Bree, and you know, the next thing they know, they're on the roof of the Ganzevoort Hotel in New York, and he's completely drunk, and he's standing up on the rooftop. He's singing these wildly bawdy limericks and songs, and so he's just he's one of those authors that editors just can't control, and of course then as Julie gets to know him, she also starts to find out that King seems to be keeping some secrets that suggest some dark things going on, and those might include some secrets about her father as well. So yes, King is one of those characters I hope is just absolutely unforgettable, and it sort of all culminates in this wild book signing at a New York bookstore. The name of the bookstore is Stables and Proud. I hope the Barnes and Noble people appreciate my little pun on them there. But so yes, it's this overcrowded, crazy book signing, and there's King Royal, and very quickly everything just starts to fall apart, and Julie finds herself in the middle of this, and kind of has to save the day, and it's a lot of fun. Again, I hope there are a lot of big showpiece scenes in this book that readers will laugh about and remember for a long time.
Especially if they have a book signing like that. Oh, my God. I mean, I've had book signings which have been interesting, but not like that.
Never bring your chihuahua to a book signing. So.
That is very true. Never. I know. What could you say? Don't bring your bird either.
Yes.
So there's a little bit of mystery. So who is Irving Wolf, and why is there an FBI agent following Julie? What do they want from her? Gosh.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's a Brian Freeman book, so we can't just
have
romance.
Yeah, I know, that's why.
We've got to have a little drama and intrigue and suspense and mystery going on in the book as well. And so, you know, the book that King Royal has written is a basically sort of a tell-all memoir about Irving Wolf. And Irving Wolf, readers will see, is very clearly based on the Bernie Madoff character and the scandal. This con man, and so Wolf is this very shadowy con man figure, and he defrauded a lot of people on the Upper East Side, and a lot of people are very upset and are wondering if he was hiding a lot of his money before he supposedly killed himself on his yacht out in the Atlantic. So there's a lot of mysteries and uncertainty about what was really going on with Irving Wolf and his con game, and so King Royal's at the center of this, and the FBI is looking into it, and they're trying to find out if Julie knows more about it, and of course the more Julie digs into this, the more she realizes that her father may have some secrets about this con game as well, and it starts to make her wonder, was her father really the person that she knew?
I know, that's sad. Then you come to grips with that, and then a mother like that, oh my God, it's amazing that she didn't go off a rocker. But then she had Bree to get bond with, so that made it better. Which does
that true.
Make it...
That is...
There are times I wish I had somebody like that too, you never know. So she keeps throwing money at this man because of it, because she's afraid not to help him out. So Bree has an idea. Eventually, what is her idea to change all of this? If she decides to sell the company, what does Bree want them to do together?
Well, Bree and Julie have started out as best friends, and then Bree made the itsy bitsy mistake of sleeping with Julie's fiance several years earlier.
Oh, well,
and that
what could you do?
Into the worst of enemies. And so ever since then they've been sniping back and forth at each other, and now the question is that Bree is in New York with King Royal, is there an opportunity for Bree and Julie to finally bury the hatchet and preferably not in one of the other's heads, so they have to kind of decide, is there really a friendship that they can rebuild there, and Bree is irrepressible, and she wants to kind of build that relationship over again. In fact, she thinks that he and Julie ought to be taking on the world by starting their own agency together and working together to sort of build a whole new approach to the publishing industry and the movie industry.
Well, I thought it was hilarious that you included you and yourself and Marcia in the book. I know. I said yeah. This is seriously was hilarious. I said. Okay. Well, actually, I have to say that there's an author that's making me an F-2 fighter bomber in his last book. Because I reviewed his book, and I thought it was great, and I'm reading the next one. And in the last one, I'm going to win. I'm going to take over the world, he said. And they promised that I wouldn't get killed off, and they promised me a really great outfit to wear because I have to look good. Otherwise, I could see my mother shining from above and saying, "You don't look right." But I'm excited about being a character in somebody's book. I always wanted to be somebody great. But I'm going to be the villain in somebody else's book, which is even better.
Well, good. Like, you can have the good and the evil. Yeah, you know, I I just couldn't resist. I was thinking through
this
one scene where Julie is talking to the person that Ghost wrote King Royal's book for him, because nobody believes that King could have written this book himself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was thinking, well, who should be the ghostwriter character in the book? And finally, I just thought, well, what the heck? I'm going to make it me. So
I thought that was great. That was so
I had a lot of fun with that. And every reader that has finally reached chapter 15 in the book,
mm-hmm.
and has howled and written back to me. I know the reviewer at the Pioneer Press, she wrote and said she nearly fell off her chair laughing when she came upon that, mm-hmm. that tasty writer in the black turtleneck showing up in the book.
it was hilarious, but my review was hilarious too. People need to read it. So tell us about Thad. I don't like him at all. And what would Sherry accomplish if she decided to go back to Thad? Ooh, no, not really.
Well, you know,
Julie... you know, you could tell a cad when you start, and I just listened to their conversation, and I could feel it in my bones, like, don't do this, don't listen to your mother, sometimes
Julie,
we just go in the wrong direction.
Julie has a past, and part of her past was when she was just out of college. She was a not very successful movie actress for a couple years,
mm-hmm.
and while that was going on, she met another up and coming actor named Thad Keller, and Thad and she got engaged, and she realized at the last moment. She was going to spend her life pretty much suffocated in the shadows if she stayed with Thad, and so she broke it off and went back to New York. But Thad went on to become a very successful actor, and he's back in New York too. And Julie's mother is sort of scheming behind the scenes to try to get Julie and Thad together again. And so Julie meets up with Thad, who's acting on Broadway at this point, and there are a lot of sparks between them. But at the same time, Julie, the closer that Julie gets to Thad, the more that she begins to remember why it was that she broke off that relationship in the beginning, and sort of has to decide: has she changed? Has Thad changed? And what does the future really hold there?
That's true. I think Bree did her a favor, to be honest. You know, you got to look at it this way: if somebody steals your boyfriend, someone else will steal him right from the next person too. So don't worry about it. I mean, what could you do? So, what is Captain Absolute, and why did her father invest so much money in that project?
Well, Captain Absolute is the name of King Royal's book, and that's the book about Irving Wolfe, the Madoff-style con artist in New York. Captain Absolute is actually taken from a Sheridan play, and it's a character, and this was Irving Wolfe's favorite character, and he saw himself as the hero Captain Absolute, and that's how that came about. But the real question is what was the relationship between Julie's father Sonny and Irving Wolfe, and was there anything more there, and was there anything that was going on behind the scenes that contributed to this big con game playing out? And that's what Julie is really struggling with, is the book that she's about to publish, Captain Absolute, is it actually a lie that was covering up something more sinister?
That would make it even more wonderful to read. People would probably want to read more about that, because they like to read stuff like that.
It seems like an awful lot of memoirs these days ought to be classified more in the fiction category than the nonfiction category. So I figured that this was well in the stream of what we've been seeing lately.
You should see what I've been reading lately. I learned, I don't pan books, but to be very honest, there are several that have been staring at me for quite some time, and they're going to stare a little bit longer, because if I don't get into it, like, you know, one of your books, I'll sit down, like your next one, and I'll tell everybody about that later. If a book takes me more than 2 hours to read, or 2 days, if my eyes are bothering me, you're in trouble, seriously. And then I'll just write a summary, or I'll just say, oh, well, no good, I'm not reading this one. And there are quite a few that are, you know, famous people that wrote them, and I just like, oh my God, not me, I'm not going to do this one.
Yeah, no, I hear you. That's the key is, I mean, you always have to keep readers turning the pages, and I mean, you want
right.
to give them that depth of characters, and but you also have to keep the story moving forward, and you have to keep the characters moving forward. I always say that one of the real keys for me is I'm sort of a ruthless editor, and we've got some great writers in the thriller genre, but very great prose stylists. But every now and then I'll read one of their books, and I'll feel like the author's kind of sitting there nudging me in the side and, oh boy, that was a great paragraph, wasn't it? And I never want to get between the reader and the story or the readers and the characters. So even if you're writing some great language and some great prose, if it's not the story forward, if it's not giving the reader something crucial about the characters, then it ought to get out of there.
Well, there are times that I really hate the main character too, which is not good.
No, that's
and if
not
I
good.
Don't
exactly. Yeah.
If you don't like the main character, then I pray that they kill her off or kill him off.
Yeah.
And there are times that I just said, like, why don't they just, like, knock it off? I mean, there are a lot of authors like yourself that write characters in a series. And, of course, when it's a Jonathan Stride book, I pick it up. I had 40 books to read, by the way, when I got that one. And I said, no, this goes to the top of my list. This is my favorite character. So I read it, like I said, oh, my God, this is good. So why in this one, who is the reporter and how come you kill, how come the poor guy, well, poor thing.
Well, what writer doesn't fantasize about killing off a reporter? I mean, it's
just listen to the news.
I throw in a rather seamy British reporter who's kind of stalking Julie and trying to get a story because he thinks something shady is going on with King Royal and so Nick Duggan who goes by the nickname Diggin Duggan.
I liked him.
He's fun. I mean, he's just sort of so slimy that he's kind of fun.
Yeah, I liked him. He was a cool character. I said, oh, you should bring him back. He's really good. I like him.
Of course, it's a little hard to bring him back now because he doesn't make it all the
way through
the book. Diggin Duggan is always there, seemingly in Julie's shadow, and he's the one that starts to put some doubts in her head about what was really going on between her father and Irving Wolfe and King Royal, so she has to kind of face her doubts about what the truth is.
Well, who is Libby, and tell us about her first book, as opposed to her second book. And she's the reason why this company made it, because she, of her first book.
Yeah, there's a wonderful character, Libby Varney, who was one of the big authors for Julie's father in West 57. She wrote one book. It was sort of like To Kill a Mockingbird in that it was her one novel, and it was a huge, huge success and was turned into a movie, and it kind of changed her life and changed the direction of 57. Much like Harper Lee, here we have Libby Varney suddenly working on a second novel after all of these years, and Julie is trying to find out from Libby what this second novel will entail, and starts to find out about Libby's relationship with her father, and starts to learn that they were closer than she realized, Libby was someone that Julie has always been close to, but her father wanted more of a romance there, and that was something that Julie never realized.
Well, I have to tell you that I haven't read Ghost at a Watchman, but it's sitting inside on my eventually to read list. And there's another one that's coming that I just got as a surprise yesterday, and it looks really good. Down the Rabbit Hole by Holly Madison.
Okay.
And I don't know. I get everything. You never know what I'm going to get. And
yeah, I imagine.
Yeah. I went to the eye doctor, and the girly eye doctor said, you've got to read this. And I started to look at it and go, this is not bad. I like it. And so maybe she'll do an interview with me, because I would love to know about a Playboy bunny. That would be so cool. So
right.
You just don't know what I'm going to get. So what made her want to help Libby? I mean, the second book, I don't know if it's, second book is not always good as good as the first one.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, Julie has always looked up to Libby, and when she first read Libby's book when she was a teenager, I mean, really, it gave her a sense of what her father did by bringing books like this out to the public, and it made her understand the difference that a book can make in someone's life, and how it can reach them, raise them up out of their current circumstances, and take them somewhere completely different. And so, in a lot of ways, Libby's book is what also brought Julie into the publishing industry, like her father. And so, I think there's that bond there between them.
Well, publishing industry is not that easy to get into. It's not that easy to get a book published.
That's for sure.
It's easier to get it published on Kindle or ebook on Smashwords than it is to get any one of the big publishing houses to publish for you, or even some of the smaller ones, as I learned. That's probably why I use Fidelity, and I let Robin do my books, and they come out just fine, and I don't get aggravated.
It's a tough business. I mean, and that's kind of, you know, one of the things at the heart of West 57 too, is just how difficult and how much the publishing industry has changed, and that's one of the things that Julie is struggling with.
Well, she and Bree become drinking buddies, fun buddies. How do they mend their friendship? How do they get it back on an even keel? Because, I mean, after all, she did her a favor by, you know, sleeping with her fiancé. I mean, it just proves he was a real cad.
Yeah, you know, it's. I think for Julie, she's got so much going on in her life that she really needs. She really needs a friend, and I think that as Bree comes back into her life as wild and funny and bawdy as Bree, she starts to realize that, yeah, maybe in the end things kind of work out the way they do for a reason, and she knows it would have been a disaster if she'd actually gone ahead and married the man she was thinking of marrying, and so in some odd way, up doing her a favor, and Bree is just Bree, and Julie starts. Maybe this is someone that she actually wants to have back in her life again.
Now I'm looking at the book because it's in front of me. Everything's in front of me. Who is Dumbo? I didn't put a question. I can't with a character like that, like an elephant. I go like, okay, I got to find out more. The people want to know more about who Dumbo is. And how it comes into play with this whole thing, because that's hilarious.
Yes, well, Julie, of course, has to deal with a banker, because West 57 is accounting and red ink, and her banker is a rather fussy man named Gordon Barnes that gives her the bad news about what's on with West 57, and poor Julie, all she can see is these rather large ears that Mr. Barnes has, and all she can think of is that he's going to get out of his chair and sort of flap his ears and fly around the room like Dumbo, and so that's all she can think of when she's in the room with the banker is Dumbo the flying banker. So
that is hilarious. So I'm looking at this, and some parts of it are narrative. And some parts of it are first person. How come you sort of told it in her own words?
Yeah, you know, and that was an interesting challenge for me. I mean, the majority of the book is told in Julie's first person narrative, for me that was really the fun creative challenge was doing the book in a woman's voice and letting Julie tell her own story. You know, when I did the agency, I did the same thing, and the agency is told through the voice of Tess Drake, who is this London agent, and Tess in many ways very much like Bree as a character, and so, you know, having done that in the agency, I wanted to have that same direct first person voice in West 57, and so I wanted this to be Julie's story, and I wanted Julie to tell the story, and it gives me as the writer and it gives the reader a chance to really get inside, you know, her head and understand who she is and what she feels and what she thinks. And of course, it gives her a chance to bring her a sort of gentle sense of humor about the wildness of the world into the book as well.
Did you have to do research or go to different bars or museums or different walk on West 57th Street? I mean, I was in Manhattan 2 weeks ago for something, and the saddest thing is that every there were, I mean, there had to be at least 500 people walking on the same block as I was walking on. Too many people for me. And nobody was talking to anybody. The sad part
Not
is everyone was on their cell phone.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, you know, I've spent a fair amount of time in New York over the years, you know, being in publishing, and so my own agent is actually on West 57th, which is kind of fun, and I know a lot of these places, and I was paid the ultimate compliment. I mean, West 57 is available in audio edition, and in addition to paperback and ebook, and the editor of my audio publisher Blackstone is based in New York, and she read West 57, and she wrote and said that you write about New York like a New Yorker. So I thought that coming from a New Yorker, and they've got very high standards about the world, that made me feel good.
We do. I walked down there. We went into a really cute restaurant, Metro Cafe. It was really nice. And it was just so many people. And I'm looking at people walking on this particular street, and I'm saying, nobody, they were even couples walking together, nobody talked to anybody. They're just on their whole cell phone, texting or walking. And some of them looked like they were going to get hit by cars because you could barely cross the street. And my husband and I just said, I want to just walk around and see. I haven't been to this particular place. We were on Lexington Avenue, and I have never seen so many people in my God. I've been to 42nd Street, 44th, all over there, Times Square, and I don't think on New Year's Eve there were that many people walking on the street.
There are a lot of people in New York.
they're all from different countries and different places, and I said, this is the most amazing city in the world. And with what happened in the news, it's sad because everybody was from everywhere in the world. And the sad part is that, well, I come from the Bronx, not anymore. But when I go to the Bronx to do my hair, everybody says good morning and says hello. And nobody says anything down there. We walk into a restaurant to get something, and they don't even say good morning. They just say, what do you want? I'm like, this is not a good – yeah, it's like so weird. So there are many settings in this.
What was that?
Now, there are many settings in this book besides West 57. So tell us about when she goes to California with her mother. That was hilarious, too.
Well, she doesn't actually go to California with
her
mother.
She wants to, yeah.
She wants to, and her mother is from California, I think California comes alive in this book as well because Cherie talks about what it's like to be on the on the beach in Malibu and is sort of selling the California lifestyle to her daughter. Of course, again, I love the relationship between Julie and Cherie, and I particularly love the way they get together for the first time in the book because, of course, Julie has had a bad night and wound up just sort of crashing into bed without any clothes on, and she gets up the next morning and is still very, very badly hungover and walks out of her bedroom in her apartment, and there's her mother sitting on the sofa drinking tea.
My mother would have done the same thing, seriously. That's what happens when you give a parent your keys, people. They show up. Yes, they do. And my mom would come up in the morning and go, I don't like what you're wearing. You better change because you're not going to school like that.
There we
go.
Yeah. Yep.
That's it. But I miss her. And every morning when I get dressed, I go like, would she approve of this outfit? No, I better change. So how did you create the humor? I mean, there was humor between her and her mother, yet there were times that it wasn't funny. How did you change back from being the humor and even between her and her father, sometimes the dialogue was not funny?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, you know, and that I think is the heart of a book like this. I mean, I want it to have an essential, you know, lightness and humor, and I want you to be laughing out loud as you're turning the pages. And yet there's there's emotion at the core of this, and there's drama this is fun and funny and yet what life is the fact that, I mean, Julie is dealing with the loss of her father, and she's struggling with what does she do next. life, and she's got a lot of choices to face and a lot of people that want to kind of, you know, tell her what to do and what direction she should go, and ultimately this is her choice, and she's got to figure out what she wants out of her life. And so the heart of that is exactly the kind of, you know, the kind of mm-hmm. choice that all of us face at different crossroads of our lives. And my hope is that essential, you know, seriousness and emotion, you know, bubbles out of the book. But at the same time, it tells us that, you know, we also have to have fun with each day and see the humor in each day and appreciate some of the wild and wacky things that we experience in the world as well.
That is right, because everybody takes life so seriously. Everybody does. That sometimes you just gotta, you know, there are days you just want to sit down in the middle of the floor and crack up laughing for no reason.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do that once in a while. You just sit down and say, like, this, that, something hits you, it's funny, and you crack up laughing, and everybody looks at you like, what's wrong with you? You just got to get it out, and you feel better after you do that.
Exactly. And it's just as like you were saying. I mean, we've got a lot of, got a lot of serious things going on in the world right now, but you know, we have to deal with those kinds of things. But I wrote West 57 because I wanted to give people something that would take a look at the softer and gentler and lighter side of the world as well, and give something that they could simply read and enjoy and laugh with and cry with and have fun with, and that was the vision behind the book.
Well, why would her mother, besides the fact that she wanted her to come out and be an actress, I mean, didn't Sherry realize that Dad was a cat and that he wasn't right for her?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, here's someone that is looking at life through a sort of a different Hollywood lens, and I think that she wants Julie simply to be strong enough to, you know, sort of, you know, take on whoever comes, and that is sort of a means to an end. I don't think of Cherie as being I think she's a very practical, you know, bottom line kind of a person, and she doesn't have much time for these, you know, these fussy, sentimental, emotional things that her daughter gets in the midst of. So Cherie wants her to just sort of focus on making money and being out in the sun in California. And Julie's thinking, you know, I think, you know, do I want more out of life than that? And of course I also love the fact, you know, that Julie's parents are Sonny and Cherie. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sonny and Cherie. So I know. I think that is, yeah, Sonny and Cherie. I know. And it's so sad what happened to Sonny, the real Sonny.
Yes. Well, and again, that's one of the reasons I wanted to have him as an actual character in the book, is so that readers could get a sense of what sort of a larger-than-life person he was in his daughter's life.
Too bad he doesn't sing, poor thing. Okay, but before we talk about my favorite book, my new favorite book, Goodbye to the Dead. Good title. I figured out that one. Are you going to bring them back?
Bring back the West 57 characters? You know, I haven't decided yet. I think I will let readers decide that for me. I want to hear from
I think
readers.
You should, because the ending lends itself to find out what, you know, if they form this venture, is it going to work out? And are they going to stay friends? And is Garrett going to come in her life? I mean, that's my thing about what I would say. That's just,
you know, it was such a fun book to write. I hope it's a fun book to read, and you know, I would certainly love to do something in that vein again. And you know, I've done a lot of different books over the course of the past decade. I've got 12 novels out there now, and you never quite know what I'm going to do next. So if readers are constantly knocking on my door saying we want more Julie and Bree and Garrett, sooner or later I'll find a way to bring them all back.
Well, I've got a manicurist that wants the book. I've got a cousin that was sticking her hand out. She wants the book. I have to decide who's going to be lucky enough to get the book. Maybe raffle it off. Whoever buys me the best decaf tea may get it. That would be, you know, how to bribe me.
They can find it on Amazon in ebook and paperback. They can find it in paperback on Barnes & Noble. They can get the audio edition. And truly, this book was also made to listen to as well. I'm sure the audio edition is just a hoot because it's so made for narration. But ebook, paperback, and audio, it's available right now.
Well, they're good for stocking stuffers, people, Hanukkah, Christmas, people.
Holidays are coming. It's time to buy those gifts.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little about, on March 8th, to the dead, Jonathan Stride comes out of vacation and he's back in the limelight.
Yep, so, that's right. Stride is back. This is the first Stride novel since Cold Nowhere. Came out 2 years ago, I think it was. And I know that everyone's been anxiously awaiting the return of Stride and to see what happens next in his life. And I'm really excited about the book. It's one of my own personal favorites among all of my thrillers. And it's got a very distinctive structure for a Stride novel because readers who have met Stride in all the Stride books along the way, starting with Immoral, know that that before the beginning of the first book, Immoral, Stride lost his longtime wife Cindy to cancer, and that loss casts this long shadow over Immoral, and really casts a shadow over the whole series and his relationship with and so I wanted to give readers a chance to really understand more about who Cindy was and Stride and Cindy's relationship. And so in Goodbye to the Dead, there's a very unique structure because the first half of the book takes place in the past when Cindy is alive and Stride is a younger man, and you have a sense of nature of their relationship. And then the second half of the book takes place present with Stride and Serena and Maggie, and the mystery ripples across all of those years.
Well, I thought that was great because I wanted to get to know Cindy better. And I wanted to get to know why her ghost haunts Serena and Maggie. But now you know. You find out. But we're not going to tell them about the book until March 10th at 10 o'clock in the morning. Can't tell them.
I think that's exactly right. But suffice it to say, Goodbye to the Dead is a very apt title for this book because it really is, is an opportunity to sort of come to grips with once and for all with that loss of Cindy. So.
And a few other people that are dead. But we won't say that.
Oh, it's a Freeman thriller. There are going to be bodies falling everywhere.
Trust me, there was a lot of bodies falling everywhere. That's what made it great. And it's still in front of me. The Cold Nowhere, I think my brother-in-law just took it. He just swiped it. As a matter of fact, the weirdest thing happened. I had two books that this man sent last week, and they were both on my table, and I went to review the one I thought I didn't read, because I read one, and the one that I didn't read, somebody took. Oh, well. It seems that my books are very... Yeah,
well, once,
it's horrible.
Once you leave your hands, they never seem to come back.
No, my brother-in-law borrows them, or my cousin takes them, or my cousin was here from Florida on Saturday. She took a whole bunch of books, and I'll never see those again either. So before we end, why is this a landmark novel? Because I received a press release on this.
Yeah, this is a big year for me because this year marks the 10-year anniversary of my first novel, Immoral, being released. And so so we've had 10 years of Jonathan Stride, and in some ways I think of Goodbye to the Dead as kind of being the anniversary book for Stride because it fits so closely. And really, there are a lot of echoes of Immoral in Goodbye to the Dead because the whole scene with the first half with Stride and Cindy is really taking place, you know, right before the events of Immoral were taking place. And so there are echoes and characters from Immoral that now reappear for the first time in Goodbye to the Dead. So yeah, Goodbye to the Dead is kind of like my 10-year anniversary book for Stride, and I've been doing a lot on my Facebook fan page, which is facebook.com/bfreemanfans. I've been revisiting a lot of the earlier books in the series, and helping people get to know Stride and sort of excitement over this new Stride novel coming out in March.
Well, there's a lot of new characters in this book. We're not going to talk about it, but I was really glad that you brought back one particular one. And I was glad to get to know her better, and I'm glad to see that she's not perfect. It was interesting to see, a teenager and how they change and whatever. But
yeah.
I was glad you brought her back, because you'll probably have to bring her back again.
Yes. You're talking about Kat, I assume, from the
Cat. I love Kat. I mean, she's rebellious, but you know what? She's a typical 17-year-old kid.
Yes. And
she's been through a lot in the cold nowhere. And
yeah, and still very much at the heart of Goodbye to the Dead as well. I really enjoy creating Kat as a character. And yes, as a typical teenager, she certainly does not always make the best choices in life. But at the same time, she's an important character in Stride and Serena's life as well, because it's almost like she becomes a little bit of the glue that brings those two back together. So.
Well, we'll see what happens at the end, because we're not going to discuss it. But I love Serena. I like her. But that, you haven't made up your mind as to what's going to happen. But I love the triangle between her and Maggie and Serena and Cindy's ghost. So before we end,
I've learned from readers over the years that they're either Team Serena or Team Maggie, and never the twain shall meet.
Well, it's hard. Maggie's got her good points, but Serena's got better points. Maggie's got a cold surface at times, and it comes through when she's with Kat and everyone else, and I'm very impressed that she works with Serena at all, and they don't slam each other in the head. But that'll be fun to see if they go at it and who wins. But I still like her better. Sorry, people, that's just the way it is. Can't change my mind. So before we close, plenty of
secrets to be revealed next March.
There's a lot of secrets to be revealed, but you know what? Goodbye to the Dead will be revealed on March 8th, 2016.
And it's available for pre-order right now.
And they really should do it right now before you run out, because it's going to run out really fast. I could tell
them
that. And, yeah, I mean, I'm sitting with an advanced reader's copy. Eat your heart out, people, because that's just me. So before we close, tell everybody everywhere they could find out about Brian Freeman. And you got to promise me one thing: you cannot kill off Jonathan Stride.
No. Never going to happen. Never going to happen. People can kind of find me everywhere. They can link up with me on Facebook real readily. I'm on Facebook every day, interacting with readers and making posts and so they can find me on my Facebook fan page, which is facebook.com/bfreemanfans, all one word.
Mm-hmm.
My website is bfreemanbooks.com. And they can also find me there. I'm sort of all over social media. I'm on Twitter, and I'm on Instagram, and on Pinterest, and I'm on LinkedIn. If you remember B. Freeman Books, BFREEMANBOOKS, you can find me on any of those sites. And I really enjoy getting to know readers and interacting with readers and getting their feedback on all of my books. So I really encourage people to kind of track me down on social media and send me emails. And I always make a point to reply to folks, because for me as a writer, that's really a big part of the fun and the honor of doing this, is to hear what people think about my book.
Well, you know where I belong to also? Scoop It is great. Posting things on. I post my reviews on there, and then you can post links on there and post articles on there, which I think is great also. Blurty, Stumble Upon. I think I belong to so many that I forgot already, where. And another place where I'm going to start posting more of my stuff is Angie's Diary magazine. And ever so often she features my book reviews, which I really think is great.
Absolutely.
Just have to find 10 minutes to actually do this. But before I forget, I'm waiting for confirmation for Monday. Tanya Campos, A Ghostly Demise, A Ghostly Murder. What would you do if you owned a funeral home and the only way you could bury the people who are dead is to solve who murdered them? Because they're going to be ghosts otherwise, and they can't cross over. On November 30th, I'm doing a special show on how we can keep ourselves vigilant and safe. And that's all I'm going to say about it. If you want to know more, you're going to have to listen. On November 30th, I have a special guest from law enforcement that's going to do the show with me so far on November 30th and 10th. Then I will be back after the holiday on January 19th with Terry James and the Necessary Murder of Noni Burke, and a whole bunch more shows coming up after. And don't forget Brian Friedman on March 10th at 10 o'clock in the morning. And that pretty much says what I'm going to be doing for a while. And hopefully everybody, this is National Alzheimer's Awareness Month. And in memory of my mom, who died of Alzheimer's, I would like to dedicate this show to her memory. And for those of you that need another stocking stuffer, The Vanishing Mind of Ruth Swerloff, an Alzheimer's Sufferer's Journal, is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, it's everywhere. And the money from proceeds from that book goes to Alzheimer's in her memory. So, Brian, thank you so very, very much.
Absolutely, thank you. It was a delight to talk to you.
And if you decide you ever want to write about writing tips and stuff, let me know. MJ Magazine and MJ 8 is coming out in January. MJ 7 is coming out this month. And we're featuring a special poetry section from a young guy named Chris Hart. Poetry from the Heart by Chris Hart. He's a young 20-year-old. And when the girls see the front cover, they're going to want to buy the book, buy the magazine, seriously. MJ 8, Mike Bond is going to be writing something on the environment, I'm hoping. And anyone else that wants to write for MJ 8, just let me know. And you can private message me on Facebook. So thank you very much. The sun is shining. I'm telling you, there's an angel up there watching over all of us today. And I can't wait to read the next one. And you know what? Send me the agency because I haven't read it.
Oh, you haven't? Well, I will definitely make sure you get a copy.
Thank you, and have a great day, everybody, and bye.